It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Oh boy, oh boy. Hello, hello. Welcome, welcome, one and all. It is December 31st, 2021, and it is 1903 UTC. Sorry, I'm a little behind. 1904. Oof, even worse. Taylor Swift 1989 digital booklet PDF could not be synced. Well, thank you very much for that alert. hello, welcome, welcome. Sorry again for the delay. It's December 31st. I slept in, and then that I slept past the time I normally read the news. But that's okay, because I have some tea here. Because I'm recovering, I'm convalescing, I'm recovering from being sick, I have some eucalyptus mint tea. Been drinking a lot of echinacea tea, but such is life. I've got lots of Dianhong tea I'm excited to drink once I get through this. Northern Lights, welcome back. I had COVID-19 for a while. If you listen to the archives, you can hear me talking very deeply. hey, Harry Larry, welcome, welcome. Shout out to Leon G, Harry Larry, UUED, Bob Junkman? Is that Bob J, or is that somebody else? But hello, Jay Malone and everybody in comm. Thank you for being here. Thanks. I'm glad you guys are. Thank you for being supportive, everyone in comm. Northern Lights has a show on Tuesdays. If you hit equal sign in comm, you can see the show schedule, the upcoming show schedule. Like right now, it goes from 1900 hours Friday to 2300 hours Saturday. So what's that? Like 30 hours or so? Anyway, if you want to jump in and hang out and know what the heck's going on, because a lot of times I end up reading comm while we're doing the news, all you need to do is SSH over to sdf.org. If you don't have an account yet, that's fine. Just SSH over as new, new at sdf.org. And once you're there, you'll fill out, you say who you are, your name, your email, you know, desired email address, your contact stuff, and then you'll log in. And once you log in, ba-dow! The world of SDF is opened up to you. Just get verified, and then you'll have lots of other cool stuff. Welcome to Publius and Nicolagi. Thank you very much. Nicole AGI. I always forget. I remember you told me once. Anyway, welcome, welcome. Let's go ahead and get started. We've got a lot of news to go, and we'll start the way we pretty much always start. That's right.
World news.
All right. First up, this is from the AP, which is a U.S.-based news source, so take it with a grain of salt. There's a lot of propaganda in U.S. news lately. Parents selling children show desperations of Afghanistan. In a sprawling settlement of mud brick huts in western Afghanistan, housing people displaced by drought and war, a woman is fighting to save her daughter. Aziz Gul's husband sold the 10-year-old girl into marriage without telling his wife, taking a down payment so he could feed his family of 5 children. Without that money, he told her, they would all starve. He had to sacrifice one to save the rest. Many of Afghanistan's growing number of destitute people are making desperate decisions such as these as their nation spirals into a vortex of poverty. The aid-dependent country's economy was already teetering when the Taliban seized power in mid-August amid a chaotic withdrawal of U.S. and NATO troops. The international community froze Afghanistan's assets abroad and halted all funding, unwilling to work with the Taliban government given its reputation for brutality during its previous rule 20 years ago. The consequences have been devastating. Surprise, surprise. Legions of state employees, including doctors, haven't been paid in months. Malnutrition and poverty stalk the most vulnerable, and aid groups say more than half the population faces acute food shortages. Arranging marriages for very young girls is a frequent practice throughout the region. The groom's family, often distant, often distant relatives, pay money to seal the deal, and the child usually stays with her own parents until she is at least around 15 or 16. Yet with many unable to afford even basic food, some say they'd allow prospective grooms to take very young girls and or are even trying to sell their sons. But Gul, unusually in this deep patriarchal male-dominated society, is resisting. Married off herself at 15, she says she would kill herself if her daughter, Kwandi Gul, is forcibly taken away. So, he said he wanted to sell one and save the others. You all would have died this way, he said. I told him dying was much better than what you have done. So, this is a really sad state of affairs. But don't worry, treatment of women is bad all over the world, especially with young girls. And let's go on down to South Africa here, or Africa, excuse me. Death of young woman after female genital mutilation revives call for ban in Sierra Leone. This is terrible stuff here. The death of a young woman in Sierra Leone, almost immediately after undergoing female genital mutilation, has sparked outrage and revived calls to end the practice. The body of 21-year-old Masari Say was found on December 20th at Nyandi Village in Bonthi District, southern Sierra Leone, a day after the FGM took place. Say's family said that after the procedure, the mother of two boys complained of a migraine and was in pain. She already had kids? What the fuck? With complications from FGM thought to be the cause, according to activists working on the case. The family are now pressuring for a post-mortem. Say's body was found in a Bondo bush, the enclosure of a house belonging to the centuries-old secret women's Bondo society, common across largely rural Sierra Leone, where FGM often takes place. Sierra Leone has one of the highest rates of FGM in the world, with 9 out of 10 women and girls aged between 15 and 49 affected, according to UNICEF. Despite restrictions on secret societies, since the Ebola outbreak in 2014, and particularly on their initiation rites, of which FGM is often a part, the practice remains legal in Sierra Leone, with politicians accused of making statements backing FGM and funding Bondo houses. The societies are important cultural institutions rooted in ancient rituals, believed to protect communities against evil and guide adolescent girls to womanhood. That's what the article says here. After Say's death, police arrested a number of Sowies, S-O-W-E-I-S, senior society members who do the cutting, as well as a village chief in the Bonthi district responsible for regulating the secret societies. This is just terrible stuff here. After Say's death, videos on social media showing political figures in Sierra Leone promising to protect FGM practices have been condemned by activists. The gender equality charity, Equality Now, said last week, "We strongly condemn the actions of politicians supporting FGM and urge the government to prosecute all offenders putting women and girls at risk." So, just really hard stuff out there. But that's the world we're in. All right. Well, let's talk about Afghanistan again. Real quick, because if it's kind of related, help clear us. My head's full of bad images now. An Afghan refugee commuted hours for his Uber job, then he was shot in his car. And we're not talking about Uber as in, like, his, Yeah, Publius, I think Publius said it in com. So are we supposed to respect indigenous cultural practices and not impose our foreign values on them, or what? And I think that there's certain things that are just so oppressive that they violate some basic human rights. This is a very interesting question, Publius, because it's kind of like, I think it's kind of like in Star Trek, which is a terrible comparison, but in Star Trek, they have the Prime Directive, where they're not supposed to interfere with other cultures, but they often do whenever there's violence or people are being harmed. So this is very interesting. That's a very interesting question. I've got to think about it. I'm definitely opposed and think that FGM and those kind of and marrying children off are things that shouldn't be allowed. But it does beg the question of where's the what indigenous cultural practices are and aren't off the table. But yeah, it's pretty much I can't back FGM at all, but I can see the question. Anyway, man, that's a very anyway, I'm gonna think about that. It's New Year's Eve, so I'm gonna think about that hard today, because that'll probably guide my stance coming in. Man, I'm curious what you guys all think in comm too. Anyway, Muhammad Dawood Mohammed was at home in Sacramento, California, when he received a call that left him in shock. Ahmed Fawad Yusufi, a cousin who he considered like a brother, had been shot and killed in San Francisco, where he worked as an Uber driver. Yusufi, 31, was an Afghan immigrant and father of three who came to the U.S. on a special visa after serving as a translator for the U.S. military. Family and gig workers say Yusufi was getting some rest in his car between driving shifts when someone attempted to steal his wallet and shot him to death. "When my friend said somebody killed my brother, I felt someone had broken my legs and broken everything," said Mohammed, who was called Elias by friends. Police arrested a 38-year-old man in Oakland on December 18th for the murder of Yusufi last month. Noam Mohammed and others are calling for justice, say the circumstances surrounding his death highlights the tough conditions and long hours that Uber drivers face to make ends meet. Noam Mohammed and others are calling, like scores of other Afghan Uber drivers, Yusufi would drive for 2 hours from Sacramento to San Francisco on weekends and work 3 or 4 days straight, often sleeping in his car because he couldn't afford to stay in a room overnight. In recent years, there have been reports of a growing group of commuters who are forced to travel, sometimes more than 8 hours away, to make a decent living by picking up fares in San Francisco during the day and spending the nights in their vehicles. So, it's really sad because you're trying to find a better life. And the only reason they had to flee was because they helped the United States. It's really tough. All right. Well, we're getting to the point.
Get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
Oh, sorry. Don't sniffle on the air. So let's go ahead and play a song. I'm just like all over the place. Let's do here. This is a song from Rancid called Arrested in Shanghai.
Guilty, but I committed no crime. They said confessions bring lenience, so they put me on the line. So I protest the massacres at the Tiananmen Square. My friends said, yo, stay away, man. You better not go fucking back there. Oh! Watch this. Would not let me write about my opinions about the state and the freedom of expression they would never tolerate, and the military secrets that I never did steal. I didn't start no violence, no, and there was nobody that I killed, no. So I had a clear account of all abuses of power and the memories of homeland now gone sour. And I only got one weapon, it's so plain for me to see. My only weapon I call poetry. And I don't even know why the truth seems like a lie. In my cell there is no sky. When I was arrested in Shanghai, now in the wealth and privilege, I was not born. But a devotion of freedom and liberty I was sworn, saw every emotion, studied, watched their control. Who gets paid, who gets disciplined, who gets rolled? So transmitter beams, my coordinates anywhere on earth, and as radio wave surveillance satellite burst. Open up your skull and let some knowledge come in. Yeah, crack open the cranium and let awareness begin. Oh, and I don't even know why the truth seems like a lie. In my cell there is no sky. When I was arrested in Shanghai. When I was arrested in Shanghai. When I was arrested in Shanghai.
Radio is your non-commercial, non-profit, member-supported underground radio station.
Powered by the SDF Public Access UNIX system.
That's right, you're listening to Anon Radio, powered by SDF. And SDF is powered by you. So thank you so much for being here and listening and hanging out in calm, or having a lively discussion about FGM and the morality of that. And it's a lot of, anyway, it's very interesting to talk in calm. Lots of fun people there, lots of great differing opinions. You can also jump in on Bboard and get involved in discussions there too. There's a Matrix server, there's also XMPP if you're into that. Just lots of different choices and ways to interact and hang out with people and around SDF. So thank you so much for being here. We've got about 9 minutes to go before the end of the show and 19:30 UTC when the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe comes up. Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe is a fun show that's every single day at 19:30 UTC. So that's Monday through Monday. Saturday and Sundays too. This show's only Monday through Friday. So we'll be back on I'll be back, I guess, but on the 3rd, on January 3rd, which is, let's see, appears to be a friend. I don't remember. My friend Mara McCoy and Rebecca Gray have birthdays on January 3rd. Don't forget. I'm just reminding myself. All right. So let's go ahead here and get back into it. We've got a few more stories to go through. Mutiola, thank you for listening and being a part of Calm. So let's go ahead and get going. We're going to go ahead and talk some more
world news.
In the Ukraine, I hear shelling. Fear grips Ukrainian villages near Russia. As the crisis continues, residents are losing hope in areas near the contact line between Russian-backed separatists and Ukrainian forces. Names marked with an asterisk have been changed to protect identities. We'll just assume all the names are changed to protect identities. Okay. I don't want to live anymore, says Olga, a Ukrainian babushka, as she prepares to celebrate her 89th birthday. I will turn 89 on January 2nd, but I would prefer to be dead, she told Al Jazeera, with a traditional headscarf wrapped over her head. Olga lives on the front line in eastern Ukraine in a town of Marinka, near the Russian border. This is government-controlled territory close to the so-called contact line, which divides it from the separatist region of Donetsk and Luhansk. Shootings have been reported here in recent weeks, and according to Ukraine's defense ministry, machine gun fire and mortar shelling have been documented nearby in November and December. Olga can hear shooting every night. I'm going to post a link to the image And we're going to say this Ukraine map. Because this is a very helpful image. It's sdf.org/l/fz. That's Lima/FoxtrotZulu. I don't know what alternative to Zulu is. I feel like Zulu's offensive, or could be. Anyway, I'll just double check that link. Yep. And then you can see in the map Luhansk and Donetsk, as well as the separatist held area, so that you can kind of get an idea of where she is in the country. All right. So she's very sad. She'd rather die. Olga's house is surrounded by signs warning of snipers and landmines. Military personnel allowed Al Jazeera to spend just 20 minutes reporting in the area, given the risks. The war that broke out in eastern Ukraine in 2014 has killed more than 14,000 people, according to Kiev, and caused an enormous displacement crisis, leaving only the most vulnerable people living in the war zone. According to Srdan Stojanovic, the head of the EU Humanitarian Aid Office in Ukraine, 3.4 million people need humanitarian assistance in 2021. As the conflict continues without an end in sight, even amid top-level talks, Russian President Vladimir Putin stands accused by the West of amassing more than 100,000 servicemen next to Russia's border with Ukraine. He says it's Moscow's right to place troops where it wants on Russian soil and denies allegations of a planned invasion. Russia, meanwhile, alleges that NATO is expanding eastwards and fears the alliance is growing ever closer to Ukraine. So, yes, you are, no, you aren't kind of battle going on there. It's getting troubling. It's getting a little more serious out there. South Korea's ex-president Park has been freed after nearly 5 years in prison. Former South Korean President Park Geun-hye was released from prison on Friday, nearly 5 years after being convicted of corruption, fueling debate over whether she would play any role ahead of a March presidential election. Park, is age 69, was the country's first democratically elected leader to be thrown out of office when the Constitutional Court upheld a parliamentary vote in 2017 to impeach her over a scandal that also led to the imprisonment of the chiefs of two conglomerates, Samsung and Lotte. South Korea's top court in January upheld a 20-year prison sentence imposed after Park was found guilty of colluding with a friend, who is also in jail, to receive tens of billions of won from the companies, mostly to fund her friends and family and non-profit foundation. President Moon Jae-in granted a special pardon to Park last week, citing her deteriorating health and expressing hope to overcome unfortunate past history and promote national unity. Broadcasters showed Park leaving a Seoul hospital where she had stayed since last month for medical treatment after correctional officers delivered a letter of pardon at midnight. She did not comment, but her lawyer said Park, the daughter of a former military ruler, had offered an apology for causing public concern and thanks Moon for making a tough decision. So, white-collar crime is, and at least she didn't kill anybody, it doesn't sound like. All right, we're going to run out of time. I'm going to keep talking. Anyway, sorry, I'm spacing out. South Africa's minister in the presidency said on Thursday that data from experts suggested the country had passed its Omicron peak with no significant rise in the number of deaths. New data has given South Africa the green light to change COVID-19 regulations following a special cabinet meeting on Thursday. Mondul Gungubale, the minister in presidency, announced that information gathered through the system used by the Department of Health suggested the country may have passed the peak of the wave. Cases declined in all provinces except the Western Cape and Eastern Cape, which recorded increases of 14 and 18% respectively. There have been a decline in hospital admissions in all provinces except the Western Cape. There is a marginal increase in the number of deaths in all provinces. The Omicron variant, which was detected in late November by South African researchers, did not cause more deaths, despite a higher transmissibility than its counterpart Delta. Rates of hospitalization were lower during the Omicron-driven wave in comparison with previous waves. So, Publius and Northern Lights, y'all are hilarious. Good times. Relying on new projections, the government announced three major changes to its COVID regulations. The curfew, which was in effect for 21 months and was gradually eased, has finally been lifted. Gathering restrictions now authorize 1,000 people indoor and 2,000 outdoor with appropriate social distancing. Alcohol establishments which hold licenses to operate beyond 11 p.m. will revert to full license conditions. So, with over 3 million confirmed COVID cases, South Africa remains the African country hit hardest by the virus. On a global level, it's the 18th nation most severely hit. Punch of your buns! If you're a witch, I'll punch you for fun. Oh, man. Boss Baby is great. All right. Well, we're going to run out of time. So let's hurry it up. Let me fix my timer so that it says we've got 90 seconds. There we go. All right. Okay. What else is happening? China accuses Walmart of stupidity over missing Xinjiang items. The United States and United Nations have accused China of suppressing the predominantly Muslim Uyghur population. China issued a stern warning to Walmart following allegations that the company's warehouse stores in the country stopped selling items from Xinjiang, ramping up pressure on the retail giant amid rising tensions in the U.S. over the western province. Central Commission of Discipline Inspection, the Chinese Communist Party's anti-graft watchdog, rejected suggestions that inventory management was behind the shift at a Sam's Club, Walmart's members-only chain. Consumers will respond with practical actions if the company doesn't respect the feelings of the Chinese people, the commission said Friday. So, oh, Walmart, doing Walmart things. Tunisia arrested top Ennahda party official. And, oh no, all right, we're going to play here. Germany shuts down half of its remaining nuclear plants. Decision to close three facilities comes a year before decades-long use of atomic power winds down for good. Germany on Friday is shutting down half of the six nuclear plants it still has operation, a year before the country draws the final curtain on its decades-long use of atomic power. Sorry to tell you that, Pooh, please.
Well, that sound means that our time...